Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that you can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, we have our interesting customers pop in to rent something. We talk about the exciting things that they have going on in their lives, and we're always keen to hear what films that they've loved across their life. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
Good morning. Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in. It is just me today behind the counter. My name is Russell. We're not working at the video store. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg, where we screen lots of lovely and amazing films, including the film we are going to be talking about today. Today on the show is a very special guest episode. It is with the filmmakers behind the movie Street Trash. So this is Ryan Kruger, who is the director, and David Franciscus, who is the producer. We love these special guest episodes. And so for those joining us every week, I think you're going to really enjoy this one. These are two filmmakers, especially Ryan, who is going about it in their own unique way. Ryan is making very interesting content that is being enjoyed by horror and sort of body horror cult followers around the world. He produced the most incredible film called Fried Barry, which also just defies genre and defies what it means to be a South African film. So I think for those that are producing creative work in South Africa that want inspiration to exist in their own unique and niche lane, I think enjoying this chat and making the most of it would be a good thing. And for those who have come and joined for the first time as a result of Ryan and Street Trash, welcome. Usually, behind the counter, we're talking about the movies in the series that we're loving. That's usually on a Tuesday. And every now and again, we do these guest episodes where we love to really get into the meat of how these creative products get made and all the stories behind them and the films that these creative people have been loving across their life and recently. So we're not going to waste too much time, but it is important to announce that screening of Street Trash is going to take place on Saturday the 30th of August at the Bioscope at 8 p.m. Tickets are available at thebioscope.co.za. What also makes this special is that we are going to be collaborating with Joburg Underground, which are our friends that produce similar events to Street Trash. This is the interesting, more experimental work, a lot of which is South African, which we try and do here at the Bioscope at least once a month. And so our friends from Joburg Underground are going to help us present the screening on Saturday, and included in that screen a short snippet before the main feature, which is of another exciting South African film that if you love Street Trash, you would love this as well. And also a special mention for this weekend coming, the film Caught Stealing has arrived and will be also screening at the Bioscope from this weekend around the world, but very proudly at the Bioscope. Tickets for that also at thebioscope.co.za. All right, let's get into it. This is Ryan and David popping in to rent something. How's it, guys?
Good.
Who have we got here? We've got ourselves a Ryan and we've got ourselves a David.
Hey, Russell. How's it going?
Yeah, very cool, man. I obviously know Ryan over many years. David, we've never met, hey? You've never come to Joburg. I've never seen you at the Bioscope, hey?
That's right. I've never been to the Bioscope. I've been to the center and I've seen it, but I've never watched a film, and I look forward to coming to see something there soon.
How are you involved in Street Trash? Because that's something that we want to talk about today. And I want to get into a whole bunch of things. I want to talk about Fried Barry. I want to talk about the economy that I think you very cleverly created for yourself, Ryan, as the filmmaker behind these films, and how you're existing in these economies that I think your average South African filmmaker doesn't think about. I want to talk about the fun of these movies, screening at the New Beverly. We're going to get into all of it. But David, how are you involved in Street Trash?
So I'm the producer, and specifically the South African producer of Street Trash, because we worked with two American producers, Justin and Matt from Not the Funeral Home. And so I was produced on the ground in South Africa.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Ryan, this is very much your baby. Street Trash is a remake. What's it's sort of a reimagining of an older film, huh?
Yeah, it's a loose sequel to the original 1987 film. To be honest, we should have called it Street Trash. Blah, blah, blah.
Melt the rich.
Yeah. Instead of just Street Trash, because a lot of people think that it's a remake, and it's not. It's very far from the original. Really, it catches the essence of the original, but it's super different. And we mention the original film in this film.
I heard the term requel, which I thought is quite a cool new word, which is new to me at least. So like a rebooted of the idea, but it's very much a sequel. Would that be a fair assumption?
Yeah. Okay. It's in that same world, just later on. And then obviously if you're a fan of the original, there's definitely cool little Easter eggs and nods to the original film. I grew up on the original film, watching it on VHS and watching it on my little TV in my bedroom. So when I was approached to do this film off the success of Fry Barry, I was like, "Yeah, let's do it."
Okay. What is the world, and what is your film about?
What are you saying? What is the original?
Yeah. So like, what is the premise, and sort of how do you continue from that? Just for those who don't know anything,
the original film was like 1987, New York on the streets. And you basically, the homeless is out of control. And in the original, that basically there's this old liquor store that breaks down this like little wall and finds this old school Viper alcohol drink. And then he sells it to the homeless people for like a dollar. And then they buy it and it gets passed around before they drink it. And then once they drink it, they melt. And that was the main part of the film, is really, they weren't really like likable characters, but it was fun to watch.
Okay.
And you watched it for the melts, basically.
Right.
So when it came to Street Trash, it's just, you know, it's like what, like 50 years later, or yeah, it's like 50 years later, but there's a lot of depth with it within the film and layers. You basically got it's a dystopian, basically, future. You've got the rich, which is the government. There's no middle class anymore. And then there's the homeless, and the government are basically trying to get rid of the homeless. And I think it came at a point as well where COVID and all these, you know, there's all these layers in the movie, which say quite a lot with, I think, over the past few years, what we're going through, whether it's Trump or all these things that are just laid into it. And then the government want to get rid of the homeless, and they start killing people off with the drink, but mainly more with a drug that they've tested. And it's like, it comes in a form of gas. And then we follow our unlikely heroes, which is drug addicts, but they're all really nice guys. And they try to survive and overthrow the government.
Where is this set? Where's your film set?
In Cape Town.
Yeah.
In Cape Town.
I think that's cool. And I'll never forget getting to a point in varsity where, I think when I was reading a Lauren Bierkes book, that for the first time I started reading or imagining a South African future, like a sci-fi South African future, because there will be a future. South Africa will be involved in some shape or form. We're not going to disappear off the earth, but we've never really thought of a South African future. So it's really cool that, you know, you're able to give us this look. It's obviously this has got quite a dystopian feel, but I mean, that's, as you said, it's testament to the time where we...
I think South Africa is always, you know, we're always like, I think in the 70s, we were quite far ahead. And now, you know, for the last 20, 30 years, we're always, you know, obviously we're behind England or behind America. But I mean, when I went to LA at the beginning of, I think it was the beginning of the year or
end of last year,
what is crazy, and I think there's a lot of people that don't know this, and I'm sure there is obviously lots of people that do know this, but I've spoke to a lot of people that thought I was literally lying or making it up. Like, when you go to LA now, you've got all these little robots driving around, delivering stuff, and it's like a little R2-D2, basically, going to drop off a pizza, or they've got a little GPS, and they're just driving to go and drop off stuff. And then on top of that, you know, you're standing there, and then you've got these
driverless cars
that are just driving around on the highway and everything. And, you know, when I'm in an Uber, when I came back, I was like, you know, check this to the Uber driver. And he didn't even think it was real. And it is that moment when you stand there and you're like, shit, this is the future. You know,
it's right now. It's happening right now.
Cars driving around, and if you get into these cars, you know, the steering wheel is like this, and you're just sitting in the back, and you're on the highway. Like, it's crazy.
Insane. This trip that you're talking about, was that to screen Street Trash at the New Beverly?
Yeah.
Okay. So for those who don't know, Tarantino bought the New Beverly, which is a little standalone cinema in LA. I've been to it. I've sort of looked in the lobby. I wasn't able to go watch a movie, but very famously tries to sort of always be on film, right? On film stock.
It's always on. Yeah.
Okay, so your film was then screened on film.
Yeah, on 35.
That's
so. Well, we shot it on film as well. Yeah,
you shot it on film. Okay, there you are. Then obviously that helps that. But did you get invited to screen that? How did that screening happen?
So our producers, we were looking for to premiere it first. We were going to do the festival run, and I think things were taking a bit of time here and there. But then, you know, because we didn't get the festival, a certain festival when we wanted to, we missed it for some reason.
Well, the main thing was that because Screenbox funded the film, they had first dibs of what they wanted to do with it, and so
it was like a rush to
the most important thing for them was to stream by a specific date. I think it was November last year, and so we had a very tight timeline of which festivals we could do, and we had so much interest. We had like Fantastic Fest, Fright Fest, all these great festivals around the world, but we just couldn't do it because Screenbox was most interested in having the film premiere on their platform.
Okay. So because they probably put in the most money or something.
They did, yeah. So they gave us like half the budget in exchange for the North American rights, and so basically they could dictate how the film released in the States. So that was a little bit annoying for us, but. Yeah.
No, but it's interesting, and this is partly what I want us to get into, because I think for anyone who is interested in the Video Store podcast and the Bioscope, it's really nice to break up and sort of expose how these films happen and how these economies can happen. And, you know, I think there's something so cool about that big American genre economy where something like Fantastic Fest, for example, is like it's a genre festival where there's horror and sci-fi, and it's just done on such a nice big scale. You guys made Fried Berry. Were you involved in Fried Berry? David?
I was not. I came okay. after
Cranberry. So yeah. Fried Berry, correct me if I'm wrong, and of course, please chime in, Ryan, is you know, was this great darling of a film that you created yourself, and it just took on this life, right? Perhaps just to kind of start the conversation, let's talk about Fried Berry in a sense of like how it was able to be received around the world. Because it you know, you see this in music where sometimes it's a genre that's, you know, not going to be played on 947 or KFM or 5FM, and you might not even be known by many people, but there can be these lovely economies that exist for this more interesting niche music if it can be unlocked. That's the key. It's got to be unlocked. So how did Fried Berry unlock, well, and what was exciting for you in that unlocking?
So the cool thing with what happened with Fried Berry in my life at that time, I was very frustrated not making feature films. I was doing the music video thing. I was doing, you know, the commercials here and there. And, you know, the dream was always to, you know, to make a film. And over the years, you know, I spoke to producers that liked my work, that wanted to work with me. And they would always be like, yeah, we'll make a film. And it just like faded away. And the next producer came along and the same thing happened. It was just like this thing. And then I stopped getting excited because it was just keep fading away. And then I got to a point where I was like, fuck this. I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do it myself. And I'm going to make it myself. I'm going to shoot it. I shot it over 28 days, over a year and a half. And that's the only way I could have done it. And the funny thing was, originally, you know, I think as a director, it's finding that right script. It's finding that right one to be your first one. Mm-hmm. And I had like about 8-10 scripts on my table. And I was like, I don't know which one to do, and I've got to pick one of them. But I also got to think about I should have been thinking about which is the easiest one to do.
Sure.
And then I had the idea for Fried Berry, and then I was like, that I just knew straight away, this is the one. This is the one that I got to do. Okay. And obviously, Fried Berry's got like way too many cast members, way too many locations. But it, I ended up doing it. And it just worked. And I knew that audience. I knew that the 12-year-old or 10-year-old, probably younger version of me, would like this movie.
Yeah.
And I that crowd in the overseas, you know, in England or Europe or America would eat it up. So by the time I finished the movie and we started playing, got into like really big festivals, and then AMC. Wanted to buy the movie, and it just went from there. And then it premiered on Joe Bob's Last Drive-In, which is a big like American TV show, and it just went completely viral on there. And then it just like spiraled out of control. And now, even to this day, there's not 1 month that doesn't go by that somebody's speaking about it. And then we've had like Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit talk about it, and all these different like celebrities. And it's, I think Fried Berry will always be very special to me in the sense that it was my first movie, and also what I went through before I made the movie. And the fact that, you know, there's not many films that are made in South Africa that people want to see again. I'm constantly talking about it.
Yeah.
And I think Fried Berry is, listen, you either love it or you hate it. It is definitely a certain type of audience, but the people that love it, like really cherish it and love it and constantly talk about it. And I think for a South African film to get any attention like that is like super special. And
yeah.
And it continues to grow and to people talk about. I mean, we had fan art and people getting tattoos of Fried Berry. Like, it was insane. Like, it was crazy. Yeah.
I just love the potency of it. I love the fact that it is this fully concentrated version of you and your imagination and the film that you want to make. And at no point were you, you know, chasing this kind of government money that dictates how this film has to play. And it's cool. And when you watch it, you just get the sense that no one is adding water to this Oros. Like it's very authentically you. And that there's something liberating and exciting about that art if you can get to make it. And then it's lovely that it can find its audience. So I
just want to jump in here. So the first time that I ever got to experience what Ryan is talking about is when we went to do our international premiere at Rotterdam. So that was our big international premiere of Street Trash. And the film, you know, we didn't even have to do any marketing. Like usually we go to the festivals, we go to hand out pamphlets, we go to tell everybody to come. We've just come from Durban, for instance. And to fill up that cinema is a Herculean task. It's like you've got to go to people, you've got to bribe them, you've got to convince them to come to the cinema. And even if you've spoken to everybody, you're still going to get like 50% occupancy.
Especially if your film is like all the others, you know? It's like, then it's hard because, ours is a different, you know, nuanced drama of a family going through something. It's like...
So what I'm saying is like, even though we've got this very different film that people should be flocking to see, in South Africa, it just doesn't happen. And going to Rotterdam and not having to do all of that and having sold out screenings, like everybody's coming to the cinema, the Q&A is going like twice the length of the time that it was set for. People are queued up to get Ryan's autograph at the end of the film. They've come with Fried Barry art and they're trying to get his signature and just praising the film. To see that kind of love, you know, really just reminded us of how we were when we were kids, like falling in love with the movies and seeing Raiders for the first time and just that kind of connection, which it's just so sad that we don't have it here. And we've been trying to make it a thing.
Sure. And, you know, there is points where you can argue you're sort of flogging a dead horse just because just by sheer numbers, you've got such a huge audience that are just interested in other things. They're not interested in face melting recoils of B horrors.
They're out there. It's just that this is the thing with Fried Barry for me. Like Fried Barry was the first of its kind in like South African cinema, and Street Trash is the exact same thing. There's nothing to compare it to in South African cinema. So the thing is, there's a lot of people out there that I speak to constantly that don't like majority of South African films.
Sure. No, of course.
But they watch all the international stuff and like that. But when they discover, or when they watch Street Trash, or when they've discovered Fried Barry, they're like, I can't believe this exists. Films. I'm like, we still don't.
And when we manage to get them into the cinema, because that's the tough part, is convincing them to come to the cinema. But once they've come to the cinema and they've seen the film, they completely love it. It's like, we just had we had to work very hard to get sold out screenings, our two screenings in Cape Town so far, one with Diff and the other one was like an intimate cast and crew friends and family screening, but both were sold out and both were really just such a great audience.
Yeah.
And once they see it, they're like, oh my God, this is so cool. But it's just that thing of trying to convince somebody to come to the cinema. And I think it's not unique to our film. It's across the board.
I've always said you've got to con the audience to come watch a movie. And what I mean by that is have that really good poster, have that really good trailer that doesn't scream South Africa, that just screams international, universal type of movie. That they sit there and watch it and go, that looks great. I want to go watch that. Because I remember being like at film school and they would say, number one, they would first say, you can't make these films. There's no money in these films. And I'd be like, yeah, but I want to make this. I want to make that. And then obviously I did my own thing anyway and did sell the movie. But it's looking, you know, most people, you know, when they go to the cinema and they see there's the new Spider-Man movie or Gladiator or whatever, and then there's the South African film, they're going to pick the international movie. And that's where we've got to change. And if we don't open the doors to genre movies and make these different type of movies, then we're never going to grow. And we're just going to be in the same space we've been.
Yeah.
Can't make good films. We've got amazing actors. We've got amazing crews. We've got all this talent. But, like, give us the money so we can make these different type of films. And we can show people that we can make really, really good different stuff that even overseas will absolutely love it.
Yeah. No, totally. Where was film school for you?
It was in the UK, and it was in Cape Town.
Okay. And you were at some point in your life watching the original Street Trash on VHS?
Yeah, in England, in Liverpool.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So that must have been an amazing moment when who sort of had the opportunity to commission you to do this? Or how did the property, or what is the legalities of that?
Yeah, so the producers, so basically when Fry Barry went on the Joe Bob's Last Drive-In, which was this like big kind of like TV show where people watch the film, and then Joe Bob is he was a movie reviewer for like in the 80s, he was always this big movie reviewer. And now they talk about the movies, and then, you know, they watch the movie and then they talk about it. But also while they're watching the movie at home, such an American thing, everybody's on Twitter talking about it. And it just went, it was like the third most talked about thing on Twitter on that day. Like cool. it just went nuts. And people started mentioning that this guy, me, would be good to make Street Trash. So I saw that a few times, and I didn't think nothing of it. But then the producers of the show got in contact with me and says, you know, Ryan, we've got the rights for Street Trash. Do you want to write a script? Do you want to do this film? And I was like, yeah, that'd be like awesome. And then again, you never think it's going to actually happen. And then it did in the end. So, yeah. So I think it's a miracle that any movie that gets made. And I really think you, just like how I did Fry Barry, sometimes you just got to do it. It was, for me, it was like all chips in, put it in, even though I risked a hell of a lot with Fry Barry. Like, it was literally all chips in, but I was like, I believed in it so much that I know, and stubborn enough that I know it would work. And it did work, and it did pay off. And because of Fry Barry, I got Street Trash. Now, hopefully there's somebody else out there now that goes, well, because you did Street Trash, you'll get another one.
So, yeah, no, of course. I think one other sort of comparison, and it's certainly not to liken you to them personality-wise or even art, but it's got a similar trajectory to something like Die Antwoord, where they just can't... They ironically, authentically very African and South African, but are finding this audience overseas that's absolutely, really like... That's their lifeblood. I think there's something very cool about that. What are something that you're enjoying at the moment? This is something we like to get to at one point in the chat here at the video store, which is if you've got anything that you've rented from our video store that you're returning. So it's a little bit of a side chat from Fried Berry and Street Trash, but what's something that you're enjoying at the moment or have watched recently?
I don't know about you, but I go through these. I think there's more shit out there than ever. Don't get me wrong, there's some really good stuff out there, but it's far in between stuff. So sometimes I end up just going back to like that I love, that I know, like I've seen so many times, but I love it and I can just go watch it again and again and again. So whether it's, what is it? Trains, Planes, Automobiles.
Oh, cool.
It's like, it's a fun movie. I know I'm going to laugh my head off. I just find myself going back to like a lot of old school films. And I think now I'm probably about to go down like Hong Kong cinema. I've been wanting to do that again for a while. So I grew up on a lot of the Hong Kong cinema of like Jackie Chan, and you know, and you look at like Yuen Biu and Sammo Hung and all these people. Like, I used to watch like a lot of those movies, but it's been a while, so I'm like, I feel like going down that route, watching like 50 Jackie Chan movies in a row.
Oh, that's cool.
What's funny about that is like Ryan and I often, without talking, we seem to be watching the same movies. So I just started watching Police Story and all the Jackie Chan stuff.
Amazing.
But I mean, you know, we're doing some research for projects, and you kind of just find these things that make sense, that can help inspire. But apart from that, I've been watching the Naked Gun series again.
Yeah,
Did you see the new one?
Not yet. But you get yourself in the mood. You just want to
start. I was debating whether or not it's a Bioscope movie, because I don't really know what that means, and it's something we discuss a lot on the show. I almost know what it's not. And I had some high hopes for Naked Gun, and then I watched the trailer and I was like, I'm not sure because of the jokes were just so lame. But then you understand that is the point, right?
It is the point. It's like, I feel like when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh shit, they're really kind of sticking to the DNA of the
best part of the trailer film. Was everybody's looking at the picture of the dad and the
and then you got OJ.
And then you got OJ. Yeah. It's like, that's totally
nailed it
in the original. So
but you say there are some fires in the stokes in the fire, or whatever the expression is. There is some stuff that you guys are starting to think about now.
Several strokes in the fire.
Yeah, there's a lot.
How do you navigate this at this point? What's the feeling, or what are the moves, or what are the hopes? Yeah.
So I mean, you just have to be doing so many things at the same time. You know, in the past, I think maybe early days we were like trying to push one project separately before we work together. You kind of think that you've got to go all in on this one project, but very quickly in the South African landscape, you kind of figure out that you have to have multiple things. Yeah. You got to have a series. People like different things, but it's also just a numbers game. So as producers trying to make something happen, you can't be beholden to one strategy. And so we've got this multi-prong approach of trying to make things work. We've got some projects that we're pitching to Showmax and Multi-Choice a little bit later this month at Silver Scarum. So we've got like the Afrikaans audience, then we've got the English Showmax audience, and we've got some stuff that we're chatting to Netflix about, like the English series. And then outside of South Africa, we're chatting to the producers about Frankenhooker, which is very similar to Street Trash in a way, like the old IP. So
does something called Frankenhooker exist? Is it a film?
It's a Troma movie.
Yeah, it's a Troma movie, 1990.
Okay.
So Frankenhooker exists, and it's the same producers, the US producers from Street Trash that own the IP, and they've been trying to shop it around and find somebody with a good idea, and ours was the first idea that they liked.
Yeah.
So it'll be a very similar model to Street Trash in the way the IP exists, the way that it's financed, the way that it goes out. So
that's very interesting, because there's something interesting about you sort of put out this commission, and then there's a whole bunch of people that will submit ideas, and you were one of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's just depending on the path that you're choosing, like Showmax, for instance, they put out a call on their web portal, and you can submit something. And then I guess if you've been doing it for long enough, you get the commissioning editors that come to you, and they're like, hey, do you have anything that you want to pitch? So
And then they're obviously doing the exact same thing as you. They're just talking to multiple people about multiple things, and then they just got to juggle it and shuffle it and just make sure that none of these fires go cold.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we always have multiple things going, and I think every day we're like coming up with new concepts as well.
I think you should. I think you got it, because you know when you have like 10 different companies, and you also look at what they do, what they make, what do they like. So you look at stuff and you go, okay, this is for them, this is for them, this is for these people. Yeah. And then sometimes, they don't like any of them. Yeah. And then sometimes they like this random one that I wrote like 10 years ago, but they like that one.
Yeah.
And you're just like,
I had a friend who's a commercials director, and you know, sometimes you sit around for a while, you're just pitching and you sort of feel like you're getting nowhere. And then he said all of a sudden five said yes, and now he doesn't have any time or is too busy. And so sometimes it's that classic, like after a drought, just when it rains, yeah, it pours. How do you guys survive day to day? I'm curious, is there still other commercial stuff that can tick you over? Because that's the tricky part for the artist, right?
Yeah.
Especially when you are trying to make your real, authentic, concentrated dreams come true. Is that in between all of this, how does it work for you guys?
Well, I think for me, it's, well, Street Trash did well and is doing well. And at the same time, I have my acting here and there that I do as well.
Acting?
So I started acting first, then went into directing.
I didn't know that. I missed that.
I think some people, when they see me act now, I think, oh, he's trying the fucking acting thing as well. And I'm like I started acting.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I've always jumped in between those. But I think I've just been really lucky with the work that I've got, and I'm going to say this. I always say to David, you know, something will come up. Something will happen.
Sure.
I think if you're good at what you do, you will work.
No, I very firmly agree in that.
Sometimes it just takes a bit of time. And so the more stuff that you've got in your basket to shop around, the better it is. And that's the thing. And the wheel is turning, I think, for quite a few months it like stood still, didn't it? And then I'm like, no, I'll come. And then opportunities arise and the wheel starts turning again. And then when that wheel starts turning, all of a sudden there's another wheel that starts turning.
Yeah.
So then you're like, oh, okay, I've got this thing and now I've got that thing. And it's just, it's just about juggling stuff. And then you never know. Like when Street Trash came about, I was looking for a South African producer. And, you know, we had the money for the film, and then I met up with David and I said, I'm looking for a South African producer. And then the next thing is, I'm sure David was like, yeah, you know, has this guy got the money to make the movie? And then after that, it was like a month or two later, we started making the film. And I still remember the producers going, do you want an extra month or should we shoot it in another few months? And I was like, no, because you don't know what's going to happen. You know, you say that and then 2 months go down the line, they're like, oh, the investors dropped out. And I'm like, I fucking should have done it. I should have done it.
Yeah.
So it's like, you don't want to risk anything. You want to do it. You want it to get on set. You don't want people to change their minds. The money's there. Let's just plan it. Let's just start doing it. Everything will fall into place, which it did.
And then once you've got that money or once you get that sale, it's about using that money wisely because as you said, you never quite know when the next project will roll around.
And so I didn't really answer your question about how we survive, and I've been thinking about it a lot lately because I come from commercial, so I used to be a commercial director. I started directing and I got into producing out of necessity because I couldn't find a producer that I could work with that did what they said they were going to do. Yeah, so that was like a really tough thing. I had so many projects kind of fall apart because of that, just not having anybody that I can rely on. And I used to be in this weekly writer-director circle, like every week we'd get together and kind of chat about the projects that we're doing and critique each other's work and submit scripts. And it was really great. But we were all directors, like there were 10 of us. And the consistent thing that we would bitch about every session was who's going to make these things? Like how are we going to find a producer that's going to do it? And I guess I just saw an opportunity to step into producing and be the person that does that for all of my friends. But, you know, I was coming out of commercials as well. And around 2022, I realized that as long as I'd be making commercials, I'd be comfortable. I'd be stuck in that bubble. And whenever a commercial came about, I would shelve the film projects to work on what was paying me. So I burnt the ships and I made sure that I couldn't go back into commercials. I did. And I, you know, people would call and they call for months, for 6 months, they'll call. And if you say no three times in a row, they won't call again. And so I made sure to do that and jump into the deep end, because that's always what I've done.
Way to do it. And
so to rely on making features has been really tough. It financially, I've never been so uncomfortable in my life. But I've, you know, it's sink or swim. And so for me, that transition was very important. And then, so I don't have commercials to rely on anymore. But I think
it's interesting that the pool you've chosen to sink or swim in, you know, is not a heartfelt Afrikaans comedies for CakeNet, you know, that you like kind of know you can keep your head above water. It's like we're making face melting, you know, dystopian like sci-fis, which I think is great. It's lovely.
I think the other thing is, it's like with me and David, like we like all genres. Yeah, I like the darker side of life of certain films, but the amount of other genre films that are very
which it sounds like are in the pipeline and stuff you're working
very,
on,
very different to street trash. And you know, street trash is 80, you know, homage to 80s B-movie cinema. That's exactly what that film is.
It's not trying
to be
anything else, which is its success. You know, there's nothing worse than someone trying to sort of push the agenda that it is, that it can be more. It's like it is sitting in there so that it can be unashamedly that, and then from that comes its charm.
We just want to make lots of different types of films.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's just it just happens to be that my first two films are just very out there and very crazy.
We've got to do a bunch of things, because I realized we didn't answer the question, and it is an important question, because South African filmmakers don't know how to make money, and it's really tough. The landscape is insane. Ryan's got acting and also, you know, the success of the movie. But for me as a producer, I'm very lucky and grateful to have been supported by the NFVF in South Africa, for instance.
Okay.
You know, like, it's you don't always get the applications that you submit. I would say maybe like 20% of them. But when they do come through, that support is really helpful. Like to fund our trip to go to Rotterdam, for instance, or to Durban. And they've been quite supportive.
Cool.
Which
This is the National Film and Video Foundation.
That's
correct. Where, like, you know, the whole joke, like, this is your job. That is the NFVF's job. It is to identify the people like yourself and put their money, you know, in the right hands. And so that's cool. That's nice that there is something. I think we do know that in many parts of the world, especially Europe, there is a lot of support from these kinds of agencies. They're far more efficient. Their purses are much bigger. But it's still nice that there is something coming your way.
And it's not always, you know, there is a lot of irritation sometimes. We submit so many projects that I don't think fit their mold. But, you got to give credit where it's due, and I wouldn't be able to sustain myself without their support. And then I guess besides that, we also run the South African Independent Film Festival.
Yeah, which I wanted to get into. So as the Bioscope, we have proudly hosted you guys, I think, 3 or 4 times now.
I think it's more than that, dude.
It's probably more than that. But I'm at this point now where we're cracking open, you know, looking back on 15 years of the Bioscope, and you just realize how many years that is and how many films that is and how many festivals that is. But I saw the Indie Film Festival being somewhere. I'm not sure where it started. Obviously, it came from you guys, perhaps more blossoming in Cape Town, but when there was an attempt in Joburg, I remember hearing about it, going, "Why the fuck is this not happening at us?" And I think I cold called someone,
I think we spoke about that.
And then we've proudly hosted it ever since. And I think it's a great spot because the films that you've curated, especially in that short film block, is really wild. And it's really out there. And if someone, a little bit like the audiences that you've said, if they were to just sit down and watch, like, their mind would be blown. And you just gotta get them out. But we've proudly hosted it. And that's a lovely extra thing for you guys. And once again a platform to screen your content. So yeah, how's the Indie Film Festival been for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's been going well. Every year it grows. So the audience is getting bigger. Obviously, we're based in Cape Town and you're in Joburg. So I think it's been hard sometimes to keep that energy and to keep that, you know, doing it in Joburg, just only because we're here.
Yeah.
And you know, we want to try our best to, you know, to push it and keep it high. It's just like, no matter whatever city you're from or live in, you always have more of a crowd in that.
Yeah, in that sure. No, and I've accepted that. But we do try our best. And I think, yeah, it would certainly be something I would want to keep putting more and more behind.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely.
Speaking of which, are we on for this year?
So we've been focusing our energies on Cape Town, as it is right now. But we've been looking for help, like Sidwell, for instance. He's in the movie Street Trash, and he also was a representative at the
MySpace last year, right?
Mm. Yeah. So we it's still early days. We're just about to select films now, but it would be good to chat about what a Joburg edition could look like this year, because we're all about maximizing leverage right now and putting all of our resources into doing, you know, the best possible action that we could do to bring people in. So yeah, it would be good to chat about that.
And we are going to do screenings of Street Trash. I wish sometimes the Bioscope were a multi-room complex where we can just have these films go on and on. I know it's starting at the Labia, which is great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it had its premiere with Diff on Sunday, but we're putting the film on ourselves because every distributor said no. They don't think that there's an audience for it in South Africa, which has been so frustrating.
But
so,
I think in a site like the Labia, it stands a chance. And I think in a space like the Bioscope, it does. So yeah, we've got a limited run of it. The information's on our website. And I want to just keep it going in the sense where what that means for the Bioscope is we'll do one, we'll add another. It's a little more bespoke as opposed to the Labia where it'll be on or off it'll have a run. But for the Bioscope, there'll be these select screenings. And
you
guys will also be very excited to hear that, you know, we've got a few folk of your frequency living in the sort of similar kind of economy and world to you guys, called Joburg Underground, and headed up by Billy, who is a lovely woman, who's been running these screenings with us. And we've screened some bizarre, wild stuff through Joburg Underground. And when I mentioned that Street Trash is coming, she was like, I'm excited for that. So hopefully through Joburg Underground, and we can get, they'll help amplify these screenings. But it's just nice that these pockets are out there, and we've just got to join these dots, and we've just got to keep the community growing, because we also now don't have this monoculture. We don't have the one thing that we all tune in for or are all watching. So the only way to do this is to grow your bubble, like, person by person. And so it is a grassroots slow effort, but I'm excited to do screenings of it. It's the short. And I think it'll work in a cinema like the Bioscope. I think we're perfect for that. It's exciting.
And so, Russell, how's it been going at the Bioscope? I mean, we've always wanted to own a cinema. Ryan's grandmother actually owned the Bioscope a while ago.
What cinema did she own it, or did she work in it?
No, she owned a few of them. So, but this is why I said when we were chatting, it was 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
It was 70s and 80s.
What were the names of those cinemas that she owned?
I can't remember. There was a few names that I sent you.
Okay.
But I can't.
In what part of the world? Where was she owning them?
Joburg. There was Santa Joburg, and then there was Durban, and then there was outside of Joburg.
Okay.
What
was that last one you said?
In
Vereeniging.
Yeah.
Vereeniging. Okay. So she was a cinema sort of magnate. Mogul.
I just wish I was my age now when she had all those cinemas, because she used to run the cinemas and also have like hotels, and I'm like, that would have been perfect for us, just touring around, going up and watch stuff. It would have been
what nice. A fascinating woman. This is your grandmother.
Yeah, so that was 70s and 80s.
Okay, all right. No, we did start speaking about it, and we're slowly trying to build some form of archive in our lobby of the Bioscope. Yeah, just to remind everyone, especially Joburg, that when I grew up, I was born in 85, and literally my whole childhood was the shopping mall cinema. We didn't have anything else. Cape Town has always had the Labia, that has existed and run since the 70s, but we in my generation didn't have a independent cinema space, and so it was very exciting and exhilarating for me as a varsity student to have this idea come into my world. It was through my then business partner Daryl, who did his thesis on whether or not there was space for something like this in Joburg, and I was like, let's just fucking do it. And it's cool to remind people that there were many of these spaces that existed. And in typical Joburg fashion, when these changes in society and, I guess, culture, Joburg really doesn't hold on to its heritage sites or in its cultural sites. We tend to obliterate and rebuild and move over to the next valley. We're not very good at looking after our history. So it's exciting to try and show that history. So more and more, Ryan, let's keep in touch. The more you can tell me or share or pictures.
I'm trying to get a spokesman to your aunties and I'm trying to get any pictures, whether it's a program or anything, and it would be cool to have some.
But yeah, it's exciting, David. And there's times where I really am grateful and think I have the coolest job in the world. Last night we opened the Japanese Film Festival, and we're doing screenings of that. We can do queer burlesque shows, sing-alongs, drink-alongs. One of the challenges, really, and it's something I'm grappling with now, for example, is, which films do you choose? Now that we've unlocked in the last year or so now, we've upgraded our system so that we've got, for those who don't know, it's a system called DCP, which is really your kind of standard way of projecting. And this means that I can screen the latest releases with major distributors. And so many of these films get a little lost, and I think would be perfect at the Bioscope, but it's quite hard with just one space. So every now and again, I get a little, not lost, but confused and unsure about how best to program. But that is a lovely problem to have. It's still a problem, but it's a lovely problem, which is like,
I think if I lived in Joburg, I'll be at the Bioscope like a hell of a lot.
Thank you. Yeah. And I think that's the thing I keep reminding myself is like, would I come to this? Would I want to see this?
Yeah, in Cape Town, like all the time. Yeah. Like we're there like all the time. And that's why, like where we had the world premiere at Tarantino's New Beverly, that, that cinema is that's the Labia of LA.
Yes, and I want that. I want to be that for Joburg. It's like, it's small, and quite a lot of folks every now and again will speak of like do you want to open up more bioscopes? And I'm like, that doesn't seem to be that's not important to me.
Yeah,
it's about making the bioscope the best that it can be. Because you don't want to be you don't want to have new Beverlys around the world. There is one new Beverly. It is in LA. You got to go to it.
Right. We went to a stunning cinema. Was it Rotterdam?
Yeah.
We had the one screen in Rotterdam. And it was also at risk to closing down. They wanted to break it down and build like a block of flats or something. And this cinema has been there since like the 50s or the 60s. And it's stunning, like a stunning cinema. You've got the booth at the front, you know, like at the you've got this whole thing, and you go in and it's all red carpet, and there's like six screens, there's a big bar in there. It's like proper old school 70s like layout and stuff, but beautiful place. And it's like, again, you know, like with the Labia and all these other cinemas, they've struggled sometimes over the years. And people have helped them
you got to be quick on your feet, and you got to have these interesting ideas, and you got to unlock other things, and you got to, you know, a big part of it for us is private hire.
Yeah.
And you know, that's good money, and that takes a lot of work, and that's a little bit in the realm of you guys like picking up some commercials and doing some commercial work, because it does perhaps take away from the main essence, which is, you know, to do screenings for the public. But I think if you find a healthy balance in a, you know, when it comes to the economics of an independent cinema, it can really work, where you can still have these like great, fun, really personal, really endearing private events, you know, because these could be with communities or groups that are trying to do certain things. We recently had like a queer book club, which was interesting. Or every now and again, when someone says like, I'm just trying to create a community for something, that's when I go, you know, this should happen at us. But no, it works, and it's exciting. And I think you really can, you know, provided, like, let's just say that Rotterdam space, provided you're on the right side of the tracks in that town, like something like that should work if you've just got the right people making the right decisions. So yeah, I'm optimistic. I feel a little overworked. I'm on the cusp of a bit of a holiday, which I'm looking forward to. But I'm buzzing in the sense that like I need a break. But we've had a lovely year. And we've had some great cinema, and there's some good stuff coming, including Street Trash.
So you won't open another branch, or you're not interested in another branch, but might you expand the cinema offering at the one location?
Yeah, that's the wish. I mean, the architecture of it at this point doesn't allow for it very obviously, but I'm certainly open to the idea that, you know, perhaps if there's this other location in the far future. But for right now, it's perfect. And 44 Stanley is the most perfect place for us. And so, yeah, I mean, there are days where you just sell out so quickly and you wish you could be four times the size or have two things running at times. But there are still some days where you got to get the bums in the seats, and having just the one is good enough. So maybe, yeah, in Joburg, relative, just the one makes sense. But you can really unlock so much more. We're doing so many more screenings with schools, for example, where they come and watch their set works. And here we are talking, the three of us, about, you know, how to make money in the arts. We should really just be tuck shop owners. Because that's when these school kids come, like, it's great economy. Because it's not their money. No, we joke. But it's fun. Like, you give these kids a cinema experience. They're going to concentrate a bit more because they're in the cinema as opposed to, you know, sleeping in the back of the classroom. But it's fun, and it just unlocks, you know, these extra hours in the day. So like, that's a little example that you just start and you build a relationship with the school, and then before you know it, you know, the other departments come and other schools come. But we love a good birthday party here.
As a kid, that would have been my dream. Like
we did that in my school.
I never did that.
We went to the cinema.
We had the VHS, the TV on the wheels.
Oh yeah, we got that. It was always wheeled in the VHS.
But we're honored to be the place for someone's 40th or 21st or 18th or even some kids. It's like some of their first movie experiences ever, you know, is when cool. They have a birthday and they're young at the Bioscope. So yeah, it's a lovely mix, but yeah, we have fun here.
Yeah, keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you, man, and same to you guys. I think let's maybe you know, wrap it up to a sense where I'm just so glad that you guys are able to make the movies that you want to make. I think that's the real take home, and that I think it's interesting and exciting that you've built this economy. So who were some of those main sort of partners? Because what's Bloody Disgusting? What's that?
So Bloody Disgusting is a publication of Cineverse. And Cineverse is the umbrella company that owns Screambox, which is the Netflix of horror in the States.
Screambox, so, as in screaming.
Yeah, that's right.
With an M.
Screambox. So that's where... where Street Trash is streaming in the States now.
Okay, so Cineverse, Bloody Disgusting, Scream, Scream Box.
They're the same company.
No, but it's cool, and you're in the right gang, which I think is great, and you proving yourself to them, which is cool. And at the same time, and I think this is the most important thing, is that you're being South African at the same time. You know, you haven't made, you know, Street Trash where you've turned Cape Town into, you're trying to make it look like an American city and everyone's putting on accents. Like,
yeah,
it's not, because that's the point where, yeah, you really are then just going to be lost.
No, absolutely. I mean, just, yeah, to touch on that quickly is at one point there was talks at the very, very, very beginning to shoot it in the States. And one, I was like, I know if I shot there, I couldn't make the film as good in a sense of budget wise. I can do more here with the budget. And again, as always, it's always important to put South Africa on the map, make it South African, to make it international. And, you know, so it doesn't matter where you're from, you'll still enjoy it. And it's still, will look international, or this will feel international. It just happens to be that it's South African.
Yeah, but that's its flavor. When we're talking about this concentrated glass of Oros, it's a very particular flavor, and that flavor is unique in that you are in Cape Town.
Yeah.
No, that's lovely, man. And I really appreciate everything that you guys have done.
I think we're
living in the same kind of universe, in the sense that we, you know, we want to make and show South Africa interesting, you know, mind expanding art, and so it's lovely to have had this chat. It's lovely to be able to screen Street Trash, and we will hopefully do more indie cinema stuff down the line. So indie cinema fest. So yeah, thank you guys.
Yeah, Russell, thanks for having us.
This cool. Appreciate your time, and we'll keep in touch.
Yeah.
All right.
Check you soon.
Cheers, guys.
Ciao.
Bye. Right, like a chat. And really appreciate old Ryan doing his thing. And here's to many more films from him and his creative, wacky genius, as well as more screenings of the South African Indie Film Festival, which will hopefully come to us later this year, or at least very soon. We have lots of episodes with other directors, many of which are listed on our website, which is thevideostore.co.za. Otherwise, scroll down and you will see all the guest episodes. They'll hopefully stick out in amongst all the clerk episodes, which is just the guys behind the counter. All right. Thank you very much. And once again, our screening of Street Trash is going to be on Saturday, the 30th of August at 8 p.m. with the tickets available at thebioscope.co.za.